The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM Sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.
Welcome to this week's KM Football Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Panting, and I'm once again joined in the studio by Steve Turvett of the KM Sports Desk. Our special guest this week is Kent's equivalent of football management royalty. As a player, he started as an apprentice at QPR before moving to Dartford via Charlton. With the Darts, he scored 159 goals in 535 games, winning Southern League titles and reaching the semi-finals of the FA Trophy. He became Dartford's first manager after their rebirth in 1993, but it was his second spell in the hot seat when things really took off. In charge when they went to Prince's Park, Darts raced through the non-league pyramid. Two Isthmian League titles and a Conference South playoff final win later, they were in non-league's top flight, finishing 8th in the Conference Premier in 2012-13. He finally stepped down at the end of last season, falling just short of another promotion when pipped a National League South title by Havant on goal difference. He's here to look back over a glittering career and give his views on the new look Darts, no doubt. So it's a very warm welcome to Tony Berman. Good to see you, Tony. Thanks for coming in and joining us. Let's start with what your actual involvement is now, because obviously, as we say, you retired from first team management at the end of the season. A, are you enjoying your retirement, and B, what's your involvement still at Dartford?
Yeah, I'm enjoying the break of the retirement, so to speak. But you know, my involvement now is what it's always been. But my job was sort of split into three sort of sections, and you know, I was sort of running the academy, or helping to run the academy, and then, you know, being full time, it was, and being a director, it was good for the other directors to have someone on site. You know, if some decisions maybe had to be made, you know, we didn't have to have a board meeting to do it. But, you know, with the way that the stadium runs now in the daytime, you know, I was doing that as well as being the first team manager, and so it was long days and long nights. You know, when I stopped being the manager, the other two jobs were, you know, were still were there for me to fall back on, and it's now sort of a situation where you know, I look after the finances of the team in respect of you know, that making, you know, making sure things are done properly like I've always done, and you know, being like an MD, if you like, during the daytime, and also, you know being a you know, a coach to the academy, and you know, being the director of football to a certain extent.
Let's touch on the first team this season, obviously under Jamie Coyle and Adam Flanagan now. Mm-hmm. What have you made of their first 6 months or so in charge, and you know, how much input do you actually have in terms of their management style as well?
You know, when we interviewed him for the job separately, and then you know, we decided to wanted them to work together. It was, you know, I think they've, you know, they've got an hard act to follow, and I don't want to blow me on trumpet, but they have. But that's not with me. That's with my backroom staff as well. It was we'd been there a long time. I felt that, you know, maybe it was time for change. You know, and have a new enthusiasm come into the club. I know it's going to be difficult for the pair of them, and you know, I have an input. But you know, it's more that they've got to want to come to me and say, look, you know, what do you think we should do? I oversee the you know, the budgets for a lot of the club, and one of them is the budgets for the two lads to, you know, to try and spend and use in the right way. But I've always done that. That's always been my job as well, to keep things on track. And you know, they, I don't sort of say, oh, you've got to sign this player or you've got to sign that player. And they might ask if it would, what do I think of a player? And what they pay that guy is, you know, it's up to them, you know, to a certain extent. It's, you know, if we decide on a contract or if we decide on a non-registration, that side of things. You know, I work closely with them, but it's more sort of behind the scenes and not being up front in the shop window in their face. Yeah, they might have been seen as making a few mistakes, which they're going to do. If they're going to learn it throughout their careers, they're going to make mistakes, or probably handled situations a little bit better. But right now, you know, we're seventh in the table, and that's not a bad shout for the, you know, for being involved with the club for sort of 6 months. I'm pleased with what they've done. Yes, there's been some a turnover of players, but it's going to happen until they get their ideas, and slowly but surely they are getting their ideas over, and you know, I'll back them all the way.
I was going to say, they've had their critics this season, particularly towards the start of the campaign, but do you think then it's all almost grown into the role now, and that it was always going to take time? You say hard act to follow in yourself, but you know, that first 6 months needed to get out of the way really before they could start getting themselves sort of, like, you know, into the seats almost.
Yeah, it's been difficult because they've had some ups and downs with team selection, in respect to they've not kept the same, been able to keep the same 11 maybe, but that they've wanted to do over a few games. But you know, one of the hardest things you know, you can have great finances, you can have a lot of money, but one of the hardest things I've found is you know, trying to get that squad together. But it's very important to me that the squad does, you know, stay together. So you might not have the best players in that squad, but if you can get them working together as a team, working together as a group, it makes a big difference, and it earns you a lot of points over the course of the season. And that's, I think, you know, probably one of my strengths, and I hope it's going to be one of them when things do settle down, and we can look at players and you know, think, you know, what a good player he is. He's come into the club, he wants to play for the club, he wants to be part of what we're trying to achieve, and then that sort of thing always helps you to be close to, you know, being successful throughout the season.
How did you foster that togetherness? How did you go about bringing people together?
Well, you know, it's a strange one. Is it, you know, people are good coaches. There's good, really good coaches out there. There's really good managers, you know, and people who can man manage. I think probably one of my strengths is man management, and I hope that shows, you know, the two guys as well. You know, when they see me, you know, and well, they've been with me in the change room, so they know what I'm about. It's you know, okay, you've got to be, you can't just be a coach. You've got to be, if you're going to be the coach, you've got to be, you know, when you go on the coaching courses, you know, it's all about the coaching, but they don't tell you about all these other things what go on, what you get involved with, you know, whether it's a chairman or directors or supporters, you know, that's never on there on a coaching course, and it becomes with a little bit of experience as well, just to, you know, I over my time as a player, I respected people, managers who treated me in the right way. I had a lot of chairmen who treated me in the right way as well when I've been at the club, and I've always tried to just be honest with people and you know, tell them what you think, and then see whether they want to try and improve or that they get what you're trying to help them to do to make them be better.
And you're always going to have different sorts of personalities within your squad. Some people who are, you know, extroverts, introverts, people who need an arm around the shoulder or a kick up the you-know-what. How true was that to identify what different players needed?
Yeah, that has to happen. And you have to, again, once you start to work with the players and find out what they're like, you know, what's anything personally, you know, they might have some trouble, might have had a hard week at work or something, you know, something's happened where they may not perform, then you've got to try and, you know, you tell someone, yes, look, you know, you're not performing to what we think you can do, but, you know, let's work at this, let's keep going, you know, you might be on the bench this weekend, you know, but that doesn't mean you're finished at the club or anything, like, you keep continuing, you keep trying to improve, and at some stage during the season, and that'll happen again, and then players who you thought were good and are good players, they go above what they can, you know, they react to it, and they you know, and usually you find if a player's happy off of the field, you know, they'll be happy on the field, and you know, and that's where there's lots of, as I say, more personal touches what you have to try and do sometimes with players.
Give us a bit of an insight in the changing room, say at half time or after a game, if things haven't gone well, passions are running high and people have got their opinions. How did you manage that situation?
You did rant or rave once or twice. We have to urge you.
When I did rant and rave, I was hoping I felt I tried to keep it constructive still, even with a rant and rave.
Because you're trying to get the reaction.
You're trying to get the reaction. I don't think anyone interrupted me when I was ranting and raving, and that was, you know, through respect, I think. And I used to say, look, if I've said anything in one of these rant and raves, or, you know, and someone's unhappy, I said, don't come and see me after the game, or, you know, come and see me. I said, you come and see me on a Monday night on the training session when we've had a bit of time to cool down. If I'm wrong in what I've said, then, you know, I'll apologise on the Monday. But if I'm right, you know, then so be it. And that's it. And I'll you know, when you do rant and rave, it's something that you still look at after and assess yourself personally. And then there's not a lot of times that I think I've been wrong, I'll be honest with you. But if there has, you know, I've pulled someone in and looked at the highlights, something's happened, you know, and you go, well, no, I think I was right, and I had a right to say it, that's for sure.
It was a huge time commitment to be a football manager at any level. You were a part-time, in inverted commas, manager, and then you went full-time. What sort of sacrifices did you have to make along the way in terms of other areas of your life?
Well, I worked in a transport company, and, you know, and I had that was going for me, and it was you know, give me a good living and things like that. But you know, the football side of things was taking up more and more time, and there was a decision to be made. And I didn't want to be a football manager just for 6 months, or, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, a chairman would come in, and or the board, and whatever it was, you had a few bad results, and, you know, you was on your way. And I didn't want it to be like that, and I don't think Dartford are like that, and that's credit to the guys who run the club. And you know, it went on for a lot longer probably than what we thought, and obviously with the stadium being built and things like that, it just sort of snowballed as well. And it was a great time. It's a good time still to be involved with the club.
Do you sort of have time to look back and think about, you know, the progress that you have made? Because, you know, say when you went to Prince's Park, you was what, step four, so, you know, and you just kept going, didn't you?
Yeah.
And it was, as you say, a snowball effect, and the momentum just kept on going and going.
Yeah, well, I think we was the blueprint, really, you know, with the stadium being built, you know, and that was a fantastic decision, I think, you know, by you know, the council and all the, you know, being out of the borough for 15 years and coming back in, and it's to have a stadium put in front of you like we've had is just been fantastic. But, you know, we've worked very, very closely with Dartford Borough Council, and you know, it's been a good partnership, because it's, you know, the place is successful, and it's run in a good way, with a lot of trust. You know, the football club sort of run the site, and it's done in a really good, as I say, it's a blueprint. It's excellent for any other clubs, and all of a sudden we done our, and then other clubs started to copy that blueprint, if you like. And you know, we've been successful and been up in the other leagues, and, you know, it's not quite happened now since we've been relegated, but we've been very, very close. And other teams now have gone, you know, maybe, you know, they've had a ground built and they've snowballed on as well, like we did. But it's keeping it in the stability, and that level of performances and a level of finances up there with the best.
You peaked with that eighth place, finished in the conference. You were the top part-time team in the country that season. How difficult was it, though, the next couple of years when you were relegated and then reinstated and relegated again, having had all the success previously, to go through those couple of years?
Yeah. The first year, there was a lot of adrenaline, obviously, what happened. And the players that I had who got us promoted wanted to stay. You know, and they wanted to stay and be up in the league with Dartford. You know, and it was a massive help for that to happen. The next year, you know, there was we wasn't good enough, and you have to hold your hands up, and it was one of them situations. It was I can make excuses. You know, the transfer situation in that at the time where you could, you know, where why it was like you couldn't sign players, and in between, you know, August,
the transfer
and,
windows, wasn't it?
Yeah, the transfer windows, and that was it. It was a massive burden on us for them things to happen, you know, especially when you're working with tight budgets and things like that. We give it our all, and you know, the supporters were fantastic for us as well, especially travelling to away games. We had some great times, you know, great memories of games when we played at big clubs away from home, and also at home as well, when we'd had some great results. But it just wasn't to be, and the it started to be where people went full time off, or two or three mornings a week, and we didn't do that. We got relegated, and we decided, you know, knew that, you know, look, we've been up there, it's been great, but we're now, you know, we maybe is well off the scenes, didn't keep an eye on the finances as much as what we did, as trying to get more income coming into the club. And it was tough. It was tough, but we had a little bit of a time up there, and we got relegated. But that summer, you know, to get us back up the following season, in the summer, you know, you're doing a lot. You're always up at the club. You work harder then, trying to get people to sign contracts. But I managed to get about 14 players on contracts to make a good assault on the conference south, you know, to get us back up. And I felt I had a good squad. And then there was the rumours, and there was the problems, you know, with Hereford and Salisbury. I just felt sometimes, how can the authorities, the league, get some of these clubs? They must know that something's going on. And, you know, it went after the AGM, you know, it still continued, and it was about the third week in June.
It went on and on. Didn't
it was
it?
A week before we brought it back, I think, something like that. You know, I got all these players signed, and they said, "Right, you've got a reprieve. You can stay in the league." And we thought, "Well, we've got to take the opportunity." But I had to let other players go, and really, looking back, probably the players that I signed, they helped the club out, and they helped me out. But deep down, did they really want to be back in that league doing all the travelling? It was probably a few of them who probably didn't want to do that, but they had a lot of respect for the club, a lot of respect for myself, and they helped me out. You know, they stayed, and a couple of guys just couldn't do it, and they, because of the work commitments. And, you know, it was a tough time to go back in and then re-sign them, because I had to renegotiate with everybody, you know, to go back up into the other league and then try and get some other players on, you know, on top of that. And the third season was or the second season where we got ready, it was tough, because I think it took a lot out of everybody. The support has done their best to try and support and travel in every game, but That was really tough, you know. That was.
And what about you, from a personal point of view, going through all that? Yeah. You know, the amount of hard work you had to do with renegotiating and stuff like that, and then just the emotional kind of toll of losing a lot of games.
Yeah, it was tough. Especially we lost. We had a spell where we lost, and probably at any other club, I might have, you know, I might have got the sack and things like that, you know. And I did, you know, I can remember a few times that I'd offered to resign, and but I was talked out of it, and, you know, or I had a 24-hour break and come back and say, okay, we'll keep going. But it was tough times. And but, you know, as I say, in all what happened was in them 2-3 years, it wore the club out. We was wiped out, as in physically wiped out. Supporters, everybody, you know, trying to raise some money, trying to, you know, see, you know, why haven't we got enough, as much money as other clubs? Well, you know, we have no sort of want a better word, sugar daddy or millionaires at the helm. We go on our own finances and what's made through coming out in the gates and what's made on the books, and that's how it is. But no, it was a tough time, and to try and get through, and, you know, there was a lot of other things happening as well with myself and family and things like that, and, you know, which we all had to stick together as well with my family. So it was tough times.
It's interesting you spoke about those transfer windows and getting players in, or the right players. How important for a manager is your recruitment?
it's massive. It's massive, and you've got to do your own work on certain players. And I used to have a player come in, have a chat with them. They'd go out of the office and probably get so many other offers, and then you'd say, "Well, can you come in and say, come in again, and we'll have." You know, you think they're the player that you want, but you have to go into the background, their personalities, what they're like, and it's a lot of work that sometimes goes in, and sometimes it seems to drag on and drag on. And other times I just think, well, right, I'm gonna have a player in here, and they're not gonna leave the office. You know, and I've got to get them to sign that contract before they go. But it recruitment, especially with a club like Dartford, is very, very important, and they've got to very quickly. Get into the swing of how the club works and what the supporters want from you, and what the manager and, you know, like myself, what I wanted from you.
Were there players that you let walk away because even though they might have been a really good player, you just didn't think they were the right fit for Dartford?
Yeah, many times that's happened. Many times there's players I after speaking to them and having meetings in the office, I didn't get the right vibe. I didn't get the, you know, there's every player, I think they know when they come to us, is, you know, and I expect it is at other clubs, but particularly from my point of view, you know, players had to work hard, and they had to work hard on the field. And if you work hard, you know, you usually can get something from a game. And if you've got 11, 13, 14 players who can work hard during the game, then more times than enough, you'll get something out of it. And at the level that we're at, it's got us through a lot of, you know, a lot of good times. And like I said, did we have always the best players? Nah. But did we have team spirit, and did we have, you know, want to stick together and want to play for the club and want to play for the manager? And you know, and at the same time during the game, you had all 11 players working. You know, we had plenty of that, and you know, and I can't thank, you know, a lot of the players who played for me and the club. I can't thank them enough for that.
Let me talk about recruitment, Tony. Give us an example. For example, Cody McDonald, great player that you know you picked up, and he moves on really quickly and done really well in the Football League as well. How did you come about signing him? How much research did you do? How many times did you go and watch him? Or
we knew about Cody because we was playing in the same leagues as him. I think he was at Witham. I think it was. I wasn't at one of the games. I wasn't there. Stephen Poore had taken the game, and I think we beat him 4-3 or something like that, 4-2. But they come back and they said Cody has absolutely slaughtered our back four. He's hit the bar 3 times, and they said he's absolutely slaughtered back four. And then I tried to get in touch with him and see whether he would come. And I think he missed about three meetings with me. And I just thought, well, if he doesn't want to come, he doesn't come. And then all of a sudden, he left Witham and he went somewhere else. And I think after 3 days, what we was talking about earlier on, he's had a row with someone, it's flared up and things like that, and at the other club. And I made an approach. I thought, well, I'll go in now, and I put a 7-day approach in. And I spoke to the manager at the time, and he said, don't worry about it, 7 days. He said, you can take him. And he said, just take him now. And I said, OK, I took him. And Cody actually came in for a training session and didn't stay to talk to me after. He thought he had to just go. And I said, well, you've got to sign you and have it talk to you before for Saturday, you know. And that is how it was. And he came in, and he had an absolutely such a fantastic spell with us. Everything he touched went in, but you just knew that he was going to be a good player, you know. He's left them. He could strike the ball left and right foot. He's left and right footed, and he come in, and he had about 5 or 6 games, and he wasn't on contract, you know. And then he came in, and I think it was an Oxford City. I think we played at home in the FA Cup, and I think he scored 3 goals. And I don't think he had a bad game, but I sort of got him into the room. I said, look, you know, I can't have this, can't have that, and he signed a contract for us. And I think 10 games later, he'd gone.
It's amazing, wasn't it? How quickly things progress. Yeah, was there a lot of interest in him at the time?
Yeah, there was loads of interest. There was loads of interest, and you know, he at the end of them games, he had every agent, I think, as well, trying to, get him to be, to be on their books. And he picked an agent out as well at the time, which I didn't know about. But it didn't help things. I didn't think in my point of view. But having said that, it's helped him, and it was great. And I'm pleased that he was the first one. Dave Martin was the first one who we actually sold, and then we learnt some things from that deal. And I have to say that Norwich were absolutely fantastic with the deal for Cody and helping the club and helping us all the way through it, and it was excellent.
A few years down the line, you were dealing with Norwich again when Ebu Adams, who'd come through your academy, was scouted. What do you remember about that time? He obviously came through, made a big impact in a short space of time in the first team, and had a lot of people looking at him.
Ebu was come through the academy, and he's come from Deptford, and he was a London boy, and he just come out, and every week at the academy he was either getting sent off or getting booked, and we had to control that. You had to try and control all that, and but he was an athlete even at the young age. He was a real athlete, and he took to us, and he liked every what we used to say to him, and we have a little pathway at the club where they come through our development squads into the academy and possibly into the first team, and Ebu he's managed to do that, but he listened, and he wanted to listen, and we had a few people who were looking at him. But once again, Norwich came in, and they was they were superb with their dealings and the way that they respected us and treated us again brilliantly. And I was absolutely delighted for him that he got an opportunity. But he was scared about it all. In all fairness, his parents are lovely parents he's got, and they was a bit concerned that at the time he's going to Norwich, and it was a long way from home, and he wasn't going to be living at home and things like that. But he he's a real good lad, and I have to say that he definitely was one who understood what you have to be play for Dartford.
And
that's
didn't
for
you,
sure.
You travelled up to Norwich with him and his family, didn't you, on that day? How did that all pan out?
I met the agent, and we'd all gone up there. We met in the car, met his mum and dad in the car park at Norwich, and we went up into the ballroom, and he was about to sign, and Evie's mum said, "Hold on," she said, "Tony, I want to see you." And I was in the boardroom with the secretary and a few other people and guys, and she said, "No, she said, I want Tony Ebu." And she pulled Ebu out of signing the contract, and we got up from the table, and she took us outside, and she said, "I want you to look after him," she said. "Tony," she said, "I want you, Ebu trust you," she said, "we trust you," she said, "and I want, I want you to look after Ebu." And I said, I can't look after him. I'm a manager at Dartford. I said, I'll help him out as much as I can, but I'm telling you, this is a good deal, and it's good, and his agent, who I've met now, and I've got a good relationship with him. I said, he will now look after, he takes over that and looking after him. She said, "No, but I want you,"
They're
waiting in the ballroom for us to sign, and we had to go back in the ballroom, and she was actually, in the end, we calmed her down, and she was happy that he signed.
Working with the academy has been quite an adventure, hasn't it? Because I guess you're used to dealing with senior players at first team level, but dealing with these younger lads, what sort of challenges did that throw up for you?
Oh, it's massive. They test you. They really, really test you. I mean, I'm fairly experienced with bringing up sort of 18. I've got five children. They're and the youngest is 18 at the moment. And how we sort of we handle it indoors and what they go through. You know, sometimes I think, well, oh, it's the teens, it's the terrible teens, you know, and, you know, you sort of lose them from 13 to 19 and then you just hope they come through the other end, you know, really nice and polite children and you know, they've got a job, you know, fortunately got a job in it. But there's lots of times that they test you, the academy boys, and it's trying to keep on their level, and it keeps you sort of youthful as well, with the banter that they try to put onto you. And you know, it is a testing time.
And I think some of them probably had a slightly different code of values to what you were trying to impose on them, and you got quite familiar with the local transport police at one point.
Yeah, it's there was a story. Me and Darren, and you know, Darren, who came through the academy system himself with us, and you know, he's a guy who's, you know, done brilliant for Dartford Football Club, and you know, and he's you know, he's gone on to pastures now, and he wants to have a good, you know, and he will have a good coaching career. And he, and for me, I think Darren will go on and hopefully work for, you know, he's working in Charlton at the moment. I hope he goes on even further than that, you know, and because he's something that he wants to do, and that's going to be his dream now, you know. But we have calls from the transport police at Dartford, you know, and it's we have got, you know, someone's gone through the barriers, and you know, and or they haven't paid, or they haven't got any money on them, and you know, the guy's coming out from London, you know, the last stop really is Crayford, and they've got to get on their bus from Crayford to Dartford, and will someone take that chance and go from Crayford to Dartford and see whether anyone, you know, it's something they shouldn't do, but it happens, you know, these things happen. And and we've got a good relationship with the transport police, you know, and because we try and deal with these things. So me and Darren decided one morning that we'd go and sit in the station, and Darren was in the tea bar with a paper in front of him with a square cut out in it, and I was waiting around the back entrance where the security was and see if anyone came out from there, you know. And and to be fair, we had two who run and jumped the barrier. Darren's got up, started running after him, and then the guys couldn't believe that, you know, it was like a sort of a hit squad, you know. And I thought, well, you know, Darren, I drove back round in the car, went round to front, and these two guys were the nicest guys that usually come into the academy, really polite, but they just had to do this situation, you know. And you know, because we're active, proactive in trying to sort of teach them, say, look, you can't do this. You know, the police, the transport police do give us the call, and we try and get that situation sorted out the best way that we can. But it's just crazy that the guys, they you know, you might jump the barrier, but you know, they do it with full Dartford kit on, and and you think, well, look, at least put a coat on if you're going to, yeah. But it's something that they shouldn't do, but it's you know, and we haven't had, you know, loads and loads and loads of trouble.
But
it
illustrates that you're really invested in them as people, not just players.
Yeah, and that's I think you've got to be. You've got to try and get on their level sometimes. And, you know, what we're talking about, you know, ranting and raving, yeah, we do that with them. You know, the teachers can't do that so much, but in a football environment, we'll have a call them in the office, and we'll have a rant and rave with what they're doing. And we've had... you know, we've had some real hard youngsters, you know, real tough upbringings come through the doors. And, you know, I get a lot of enjoyment out of, you know, working with these guys for 2 years. And it's difficult sometimes. But, you know, at the end of it, we shake hands. And, you know, I think that if we made them a little bit better as people and as a person, then it's good satisfaction. Is even if, like, with Ebu, he's gone on to Norwich, but these other guys have taken another route, and you know, hopefully they've just learnt a little bit of respect from us, and they've got it, you know, got it from us, and they give us it back.
Has it been a real eye opener, some of the situations that you found yourselves in with some of these kids from tough backgrounds?
Yeah, it has. And you know, but you know, there's a couple who no, I don't think they're living rough, but they've been in our stalls, and we've given them an opportunity, and we've had a couple of guys come out you know, they were really, really they were tough guys. You know, they got involved in the wrong things, but when they come to us at Dartford, they respected and they loved being there. You know, but they are, when they want to be protective, they can be. And we had a situation quite a few years ago now where, you know, it kicked off on an academy game. Yeah, and without sort of mentioning it, you know, these two guys, something had happened in the match, and it was only verbal between two players, an opposing player, but it kicked off, and it got really ugly. And it's the first time I've sort of noticed anything with them, that situation. But you know, a guy sort of, he ran back into the changing room, you know, come out back with a bag over his hand, and you know, they thought he got a knife. And you know, I was standing in the middle of the pitch thinking, oh my god, what's going to happen here? I can't tell you if it was, you know, a knife in his hand or not, but he had a paper bag over his hand, and he'd lost it completely, lost control. Fortunate enough for everybody, and his teammates had calmed him down, and you know, it happened. And you know, it's a long time ago now, but it wasn't something that we was pleased about. In fact, we was really upset, both teams. And and it doesn't happen all the time, but it can, you know, going back again to when you're how far do you go with being, you know, having a row and having a shout and things like that. But you know, the two guys who was with us at the time, they were fairly used to that sort of environment. So they came from in London, and I mean, I'm a London boy myself. I was born in Stockwell, and you know, I was in London for 21 years, and you know, I sort of understand a little bit of what's going on. But they're tough times for them, and but they, you know, they felt that someone was disrespectful for them and being in a verbal sort of way, and that's how it ended up.
And something for you as a football coach, a football manager, I guess nothing can prepare you for that moment when he suddenly rushes out.
No, he rushed. As I say, there seemed to be a lot of players. You've got 20 odd players who were to try and keep him keep it under control, and you know, for a little while we did lose it. But when the guy come out, it was fortunate enough that you know, the players from his own side, you know, stopped the situation. But it was there, and you thought, what do I do here? You know, where do I you know, where does it stop? What shall I do? There's someone running at you, and I haven't even, you know, we're not even, it's just that you're the senior sort of citizen, if you like, you're the man in charge. But they managed to get him, and even at that time, the guys who I spoke to in the other side were, you know, they had respect for us, so even in that 5-10 minutes of what we tried to do and what they tried to do, and it was a scary situation, but it sorted itself out, and no one was seriously injured, which could have happened.
Talk about scary situations. Another one you found yourself in with Ali Reith, the young Welling player who collapsed on the pitch, and you were there watching.
Yeah, you know, I think I'd had a row with my wife on a Sunday, and you know, I said I've got to go up to the club. It was a bank holiday, and I'm sure he was playing Ebbsfleet on the Monday, and I said, I've got to go up to the club, I've got to go and look at some highlights. It's Sunday, you've got to go, you know, you just got home from Saturday's game, and you know, that situation, what you get indoors. And having said that, she's lovely, my wife, and stayed with me for a long, long time. I'm not sure how, but she did.
Credit to her,
yeah. I watched, come out and thought, well, I watched the highlights of Ebbsfleet. I came and watched the game, and it was a friendly, I think the game was, Welling versus Dartford. And I sat on my own over one side of the pitch, walked round to our coach, Phil Murray, who was watching the game, talking. And out the corner of my eye, the ball was at one end, but out the corner of my eye, I just see this lad, he went over, and he just completely collapsed. And I said to Phil, he's in trouble. And we both looked at him, and we had to shout to the ref to stop, but we run on, and he was on the floor, and he was in trouble. And you could tell on the straight away was on the phone, while he was around him, and a couple of other guys, their two coaches come on, and me and Phil was there, and the players didn't know what was happening, and I looked at Ali, and I sort of he was doing he lifted his eyelids up, and I could just see the whites of his eyes, and I wasn't too sure if he was breathing, and I'm on the phone as well, and I'm saying, look, I've got a serious situation. It's not a broken leg, it's not a broken arm or something. This guy's in trouble, you know. And I'd been on a renewed the first aid course, which we have to do at our place, you know, which I went on. And the lady on the phone at the other end, she said to me, Tony, she said, can you look, blah, blah. And there was four of us around him on the floor. They said, look, can you feel a pulse? And Phil said, I can't feel a pulse, Tone. I can't feel a pulse. And I couldn't see any breathing. And, you know, these things come at you on the course. You're on the first aid course, and there's little things. You get a flashback of what you have to do. And can you tell if he's breathing? I've got the phone and put the glass there to see if he's breathing. The two other lads who was from the welling, who I didn't know them, and there's four of us round Ali, and I'm thinking, she said, look, you've got to start CPR, you know. And then I'd done it on the course at the first aid course, and that was it. I thought I'm looking round, is someone gonna, and I looked like I've got, to take the lead, so we started, and I started the CPR, and it was, and I thought, you know, I got his mum and dad come over, and I'm thinking, can he hear us? And I can remember doing the CPR, and you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, you know, which is flashback from the course. I'm telling his mum to, you know, to just shout out to him that you love him, you know, because it was a that serious situation, and I can remember that. I can remember then. All of a sudden, it seemed like a lifetime, you know, it seemed ages and ages, and the ambulance worked, but they was quick, they were there within 5 minutes, I think they was there. But the lady on the phone, who I don't know who it was, but she's absolutely brilliant. She was so good. I was trying to put her on loudspeaker, and we were still trying to do the CPR, and it was a situation that I don't want to be in again, you know. It was real tough. And then the next thing, it seemed to be an hour that he was on the pitch. He was being seen to by the air ambulance, came and landed on the pitch, and you know, it seemed ages, but there was all these people, yeah. And there was I only knew Phil. There was two guys from Welling, never knew anything, and all of a sudden we were trying to work as a team. And going back to what we're saying, you might not have the best people there, but we tried to work as a team on this situation. And then I remember, you know, Ali was on. He'd gone. I think he'd gone a couple of times. I think, but they got him back. And we after doing the CPR, but they put him into a coma on the pitch. And there was 10 people. It must have been all these guys from and they don't know each other. They don't know each other from Adam. They've come from on the air ambulance. They come from ambulances all around him, but. It was the most, I don't want to say it again, but it was probably one of the most brilliant things I've seen as well, that they all pulled together to try and save this guy's life, you know, and to get him back into, you know, getting back from, you know, and, you know, we was told later that, you know, they lost him 2 or 3 times on the pitch, and it was, you know, it was a fantastic achievement, and you know, that you know, I think he was in a coma for a self-induced coma, but he was in for 3 or 4 days after. But and then you're thinking about, oh, have you done everything right? You've done everything right.
I bet that was the only thing on your mind for those 3 or 4 days.
It was through the game, you know, the absolute game next day. Obviously, it got out what had happened, and it wasn't the right preparation to be in charge of a game and things like that. Yeah, to about 3 or 4 days later, he came out, and you know, he had a pacemaker fitted and things like that. And fortunate enough, and you know, that he survived and he come through it. But it was an ordeal that you know I don't really want to go through again.
No, and you've had your own health scares as well, Tony, with your heart, heart attack, mild heart attack. I'm not sure the exact right term, but what was that like going through that?
That was again. I've been fortunate enough not to have sort of too many problems, you know. And I think the shock was I didn't really. Well, again, that was a bank holiday weekend, and we had Ebbsfleet on the Monday. on a Saturday night, me and myself went out, and we was over VCD, me and my wife and Lee, and we was at VCD for a function there. And I wasn't feeling that well before, but we still went. I just said, no, we've got to go. And then during the night, I wasn't feeling rough again. And the next minute, I just felt that I had, you know, about 2-3 people standing on my chest, you know, and that's how it was. And then we went to, I was taken to the hospital about 6 o'clock in the morning, 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning. And I had to have some tests, you know, the blood test, which tells whether you've had an heart attack or not. You don't get the result back until 12 hours later. And I was in the hospital and thinking I'm still going to go to the game, you know, game on the Monday. And we had a horrendous weather I remember that being in the ward. It was tough, but right up until it was 10 o'clock at night, I still didn't know if I'd had a, and it was the bank holiday, and I thought, well, that, you know, probably the staff are away or something like. And then I started to get dressed. I said, "Look, I'm going, and I want to go home because I've got a game tomorrow." And it was strange. And then all of a sudden, they come in and said, "No, you've had. I can now tell you that you've had an heart attack, and you're not going anywhere. You've got to stay in." And I've got. It sounds like it wasn't. For want of a better word, abusing the body or anything like the. What I have. I have something which I explained to me called ectasia, which is. I have been born with some narrow arteries. They're not narrow because of something you might have eaten or not looking after yourself or, you know, abusing the body, if you like, for want of better words. It's a condition which is not found in many people. And at the time, I'm thinking I'm 58 here. It's the first time someone's told me that I've got a condition on my heart, you know. And yeah, you know, with the help of the staff at Darrenf, again, I was you know, they're fantastic people, I must say, and then probably changing the diet a little bit, but I didn't have no stents, I didn't have to have any of that. It was just the fact that, you know, that I've been born with a couple of arteries which are not the normal size, and so with looking after it, it's you know, I've been absolutely, touch wood, I've been fine since, and you know, I continue to walk the dog at 7 o'clock in the morning to get me exercise.
I remember that game well. It was one of those occasions where Paul Sawyer and Steve Mosley take charge in your absence.
Yeah,
I mean, those two and the staff you had as a backroom group over the years, you know, were really tight, weren't they? Important to have people you can trust.
Yeah, yeah. I can't thank Paul and Steve enough for the help that they gave me. You know, and you're bringing it like today. It's although Adam and Jamie have come out and they're joint managers. You know, Paul and Steve had a big say in the decisions what we made on team selection. Yes, I fronted it as being, you know, as being the manager, but there were times when I felt I was right and they thought they was right, and I might have gone with them. I thought, oh, and I've taken that. You know, we come out, we made the decision at joint. You know, the three of us, and so that's why, you know, yes, it's all right to be a number one, and you know, but it, you know, over the years we are. We've been good friends, and we've had our ups and downs like you do, but that's what makes good friends. And you know, it was obviously a difficult time when I decided to go, and they also come away from the club, but you know, they've had, you know, you've got a team behind the scenes which are brilliant, and they're not always mentioned probably as much as what they should be, but as far as I'm concerned, they've they were brilliant for me, and they helped me you know, ever so much along the way, especially in some difficult times that I had.
Do you think they ever considered taking over from you once you decided that, you know, you're going to step aside?
Yeah, I think, in all honesty, that, you know, it was possible that it happened. It could have happened, but it was a situation where I went back and I felt that change was probably the better for, you know, that sort of thing was to happen. The two guys, Steve and Paul, possibly there was a chance, but it probably come too late, or letting us know that it, you know, too late to that when we tried to do things. But having said that, my honest opinion was to have a clean sweep.
You talk about the game changing. It's certainly changed in Kent. Last year alone, we just saw a huge number of managerial changes at our various clubs, and several long-serving managers, not just yourself, but yeah. Chris Kinnear, Jay Saunders, Ray Turner. Felt like a little bit of an end of an era in that way. Do we just have to accept that's the way football is, that managers don't get very much time now?
No, they don't at all. It's wrong, really. But it's the nature of the beast, you know. It's the it's got to be successful from day one, and you can't really build anything too much on from you know in 2 or 3 months. It takes a bit of time, and you hope that the results can go well for you. But again, and probably that's why all this new technology is coming into it to try and make things happen quicker.
The big one recently, in terms of changes, John Steele coming in at Maidstone. Yeah. Amazing, really, but given that you played for him back in the early 80s.
I played for John, and you know, and we had some great times. You know, and talking about good players being together, the teams that we had then were excellent. You know, and John was. Had a way of management, and you know, and how he wanted. He was a winner through and through, you know, back then, and it rubbed off on all the players. It rubbed off on all the players, and you know, he's you know, I've got a good relationship with John. We talk, and not all the time, but you know, we do talk, and I know that if I have any problems or I've got any issues, you know, with football issues or anything I might need help with, there's a real number of people that I can call on, you know, throughout the county, but you know, John's he's definitely one of those guys.
Time for a quick wrap up of the weekend's action as well, if we can. We'll quickly rattle through this because it's a fascinating hear from Tony. Gillingham remain a point above the League One relegation zone following their 1-1 draw at Coventry. Tom Eaves' stoppage time penalty rescued a point for Jules, who made 5 loan signings last week, including 4 on deadline day. Jules host Barnsley at Priestfield this weekend. International League, Dover missed the chance to move 6 points clear of the bottom 4 after slipping to a 2-1 defeat against playoff hopefuls Gateshead at Crabble on Saturday. It was the only game of the day, with Ebbsfleet and Maidstone both having their fixtures postponed. Stones, who travelled to Salford in a rearranged FA Trophy tie on Tuesday night, entertained AFC Fylde in the league on Saturday. Fleet host Solihull, while Dover are at home to Harrogate. National League South, Dartford get the chance to climb back into the playoff places with trip to second-placed Woking on Tuesday night. They then host fourth-placed Bath this Saturday, while Welling make the trip to Dulwich. Tony, I mean, is that what Flan and Coyley are going to be judged on, getting into the playoffs? Is that the minimum requirement this season? They've publicly said that is, but is that what the club are anticipating as well?
No, I personally don't think that we have to put that pressure onto them. I think it was what it was is I think we this year that I say I felt we, you know, they had an hard act to follow, and it really is that it's a settling down period you know, to what they can do. I've asked them to concentrate purely on just the football side of things, and not worry about what else goes on at the club. That takes care of itself at this moment in time. We had a board meeting, I think it was either the October or November, and November one, we was in a we climbed up to fourth or fifth, and just said, look, if we're in this position come the end of February, middle of March, then, you know, we've got a real chance. You know, we got a real chance to win it at the time. Back then, and what are we saying? But we've got a chance to be involved and getting and have our say. There's a little bit of a gap appearing, to be fair, but in all fairness, they're in seventh, and it's still in a playoff position right now. And they've got some tough games coming up, and it could football is such a strange game. You know, Chelmsford wasn't doing that well when we or they'd had a spell just before we played them. They've scored two goals in late on in the game a few weeks back. Since then, they've won every game. All of a sudden, they're up into third, you know, and they've just moved up. So that's how our football can change so quickly. If we can get some real decent results over, you know, in the next 6 weeks and keep our just nicely tucked in there, you know, Braintree last year, they came late and they got it all together, and all the group of players again were to get together, you know, as a group, and they're all pulling in the same direction, and they've done it right in the playoff at the time of the playoffs. So anything can happen. I'd love them to be in the playoffs. I'd love the club to be into the playoffs and give themselves an opportunity of getting promoted. You know, and it looks like they're going to attack it from a different way now, but you know, that's ideally that's what we want, but do I want to put that pressure on them? You know, no, I don't. I think it's going to be tough enough in the coming seasons for them to have that pressure on, and not just to be in the playoff, but to win the league. And make no mistake, we want to go back up into the top league. It's where we want to be, and we know it's going to be tough, and we know we've got to change the way the club is run, you know, where we'll have to go full time. But you know, if they're in the playoffs this at the end of the term, then you know, good luck to them and well done for that.
Into Bostic Premier we go then. Tunbridge are up to fifth following their 3-2 win at Bognor, but Folkestone lost ground after a 6-0 humbling at leaders Dorking Wanderers. Margate went down 4-0 at Enfield Town. Gate host Dorking Wanderers on Tuesday night, while Folkestone entertain Corinthian Casuals. Tunbridge make the trip to Lewis on Wednesday. It's a tasty game on Saturday as Tunbridge host Margate at Longmead, while Folkestone travel to Harlow. Bostic South East, Ashford are up to second, courtesy of a 2-1 home win over Sevenoaks, but Cray Wanderers beat Herne Bay 6-0 and are 13 points clear at the top. Hive are seventh after a 1-0 win over Three Bridges, while Sittingbourne ease their relegation fears with a 4-3 success at Phoenix Sports. Full midweek programme, Faversham hosting Hive, Herne Bay against Ramsgate, Sittingbourne against Ashford and Whitstable at Sevenoaks among the highlights. Two teams from Southern Counties East start into the last eight of the FA Vars. Canterbury held on with 10 men to defeat Leicester and Verna, while Cray Valley won 3-1 against Abbey Rangers. Both teams are now just two rounds away from Wembley. In the league, Fisher regained top spot with a 1-0 win at Sheppey. Tony, we normally close off with some quickfire questions. I've got one or two things, and I think Steve has as well. When you look back now, who was the player that you thought, you know, I've got no chance of signing this player, but you've somehow managed to convince him that Dartford was the right place to go?
Mark Arbour was a good signing for us. I didn't think we could get Mark, and he played in at Wembley, won the league, and you know, with Dagenham and things like that, and he'd had a good experience player. He come and saw us, you know, and I thought, I've got no chance of getting him. I've got no chance. And he lived in Peterborough, but he wanted a challenge, and he came to us, and he liked what he saw. And, you know, in all fairness, I think Mark was one of the guys that I never ever thought we could sign, and we did. And I have to say, he was brilliant for us. He was an excellent player at the age of 35, I think 36 maybe. But he helped us through that first season, that's for sure.
What about the most naturally gifted player that you worked with during your time at Dartford?
Well, it's got to be Azy, really. He was a stranger. That's a story. You know, the way we got Ryan, and he's another one. I to be fair, like Cody, I phoned the manager up and said, look, I'd seen Ryan in a game playing for Slade Green, and everybody, his teammates, the opposing team, the opposing bench, his home team, were all moaning at Ryan. They was all moaning at him, and I thought he was the best player on the park back then. It's weird, but that everyone was moaning at him, and I just thought he was a little bit older than what he was. And then I phoned the manager up at the time, and I just said, look, would you mind if I just, can I just take him in to do a bit of training? You know, don't cause you any grief, but I just want to have a bit of a... He said, don't. He said, you can take him. Take him. He said, I don't want to see him ever again. He said, just take him. And he came and signed for us. And I'm so disappointed with, let's put it down as, with at league clubs, you know, because at his prime, Ryan was something else. And he was... How they didn't take a chance on him, I just don't know. And he would have loved it. He would have absolutely loved being a pro footballer. And they just, no one came in. No one came in and said, like, no, we're going to want to take him. And when he was at a prime, he was he was something else, and he was a game changer. He put bums on seats at Dartford, that's for sure. And he some of the things that he done on the football pitch, again, went in our promotion times and good seasons, was Premiership stuff. And I was just so shocked that someone hadn't come in and given a chance.
Manager moaning at Ryan Hayes, it does ring a bell, though. he gave you a bit of grief as well, didn't he?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I've got a great relationship with Ryan. He's been excellent for the club over the years, and you I think there's no in between. He's either brilliant or he's a waste of space. And there's nothing, you don't get nothing in between. It's either, you know, and you know, his delivery on a set piece is excellent, and his crossing was at the time, you know, brilliant. You know, it just, there was no other word for it, and that's where we owe a lot to him with some of the performance that he made.
Talk about big players at Dartford. I mean, it'd be amiss of us not to mention Elliot Bradbrook at this point when you talk about Hazy as well. What's your best memories of Elliot Bradbrook as a player for you?
Well, he was probably another one that I didn't think we could get, and we managed to. Being, you know, it was a lot, that was to do with where he lived. He was playing for Maidstone, and he lived at Dartford, but he was quite happy at Maidstone. But we managed to pry him away. And Elliot sort of typified what we was about. You know, he wanted to work hard in games. He wanted to win games. He scored goals. He was playing sort of wider left at the time. You know, but we knew he could come inside playing a centre midfield role. We knew he could play centre half, but he was he's just been an absolute gem to work with. You know, and quality on the ball and things like that was probably not Elliot's, you know, greatest asset, but box to box, wanting to win a game, wanting to score a goal, never giving up attitude, he's always there for the calls. And I never had any problems with him whatsoever over the 10 years or whatever it is he's been at the club. I never had, you know, and he would always come out with, you know, he'd always come out backing you and things like that. But well, I've never had a bad thing to say about him, I don't think. You know, I might have told him a couple of times that I think he's had a bad game, but that's happened. But overall, you want him in your side, and he's a proper leader, that's for sure, proper leader.
And the other one of that group that's still going strong at the club, Lee Noble, played hundreds and hundreds of games. A very different type of player to the other two, and different type of player to Elliot in midfield. But he seems to, he just keeps his standard so high every year. What would you say about just his longevity at Dartford?
He's another one. When we he played for us. He was at Brentwood. He slaughtered us in a game, and we said, like, you know, I want to talk to him. And in the summer, I managed to talk to him, and I met his parents. And Lee, I'm telling you now, he's probably one of the toughest guys I think I've met. You know, he's talking about in London with the academy boys earlier on. You know, Lee, in his early days, he found himself in a little bit of trouble, on the wrong side of a bit of trouble. You know, when I was trying to sign him, he's had a big tattoo on him. You know, what goes around comes around. You know, he's and that typified him. You know, what's happened with Lee? He's another one who's a winner. He gives his all for the calls. He's never caused me any problem at all when we go in and sign a contract for the following year. Don't get me wrong, you know, he's on a good deal for us, but he's another one who, again, for me, I can't understand why a league club haven't come in and taken, you know, he's very much in, for me, in the SE mode, you know, with, you know, when SE was, I knew when he was working in a, he was working in Bexley, you know, and at lunchtime you'd see him running round the road. You know, his attitude was second to none. Essie's and Nobes has got that. Nobes has got that, and both of them were real hard guys as well. And you know, it's Nobes reminds me a lot of him, but how he hasn't been given that opportunity, I don't know. But he's improved so much as a person, you know, as well. And he's such a good lad to have around the change room, it's been a privilege really to manage him, you know. And he's another good, you know, he's turned into a real good person as well as a good footballer.
What was your favourite ground you went to as a manager, Tony?
As a manager, I games that stand out, you know, and when we went up into the Prem, if so to speak, you know, we went to Luton, you know, and my memory to Luton was playing at for Charlton against them, and you know, we lost 7-0, I think it was 7-0 or 7-1 on one particular afternoon, and it you know, that was a strange day, but we went to Luton. In that first season, or second, might have been the second season when we weren't doing that well, and we went. I think we had 600 people travel with us, and they never stopped singing. And I stood on the pitch on my own before the game, and I was just looking around. And it's an old stadium, but it was nice and enclosed. And you know, there's been a lot. I've been fortunate enough to be involved. We've gone and seen a lot of stadiums, and but that was, on that particular day, it brings back memories.
One thing we've not spoken about yet is your playing career. I mean, you touched on it just there. I mean, there was some amazement in the office. I think I'm actually, although you wouldn't think, I'm actually old enough to remember your playing days when you went back to become. You were player manager, weren't you, when Dartford reformed in '93? As a manager now. Did you see yourself when you were actually playing going that path at that time?
Back then, we when John Steele left Dartford, I was about 27, I think I was then, and the chairman at the time, Brian Alford, the late Brian Alford, you know, he wanted to interview me for the job back then at 27, and I had the interview, and it was the early part of the summer, and. I had the interview, and it went well. It did go well, to be fair. And then I think they seemed to wait a long time for. So they was picking, obviously doing other interviews and trying to get other managers. I was going away on my summer holiday on a Saturday in June, and I hadn't heard nothing. You know, if I say for a full month, and then all of a sudden Brian came on the phone. And on the Friday afternoon, and I'm sort of packing to go away on Saturday. And he said, "Tony," he said, I said, Brian, how are you?" He said, and I thought he's just going to let me know he's named the manager. And he said, "I want you to be the manager." And I said, "Brian," I said, "you've waited a month now." I said, "for me to come back." I said, "I'm going on holiday." He said, "well, cancel the holiday. You just cancel your holiday. It's not a problem. Just cancel it." And I said, "no." I said, "I've had a good think about it." I said, "and I'm 27. I said, I think I want to still be playing." I said, "I don't want to be. I'm not going to be the manager." He said, "what do you mean you don't want to be the manager?" And I said, I'm going on holiday. It's the wrong time to talk to me." I said, and thinking about it, do I really want to stop right at this age to be the manager just to, you know, to stop, you know, get, you know, if like get you out of trouble, whatever?" I said, "no, I've really thought about it. I want to still carry on playing." And over that weekend, they named Peter Taylor as manager. And you know, and I didn't, you know, I played under Peter, and again another guy who, as you know, I can sort of phone up if I need any advice. You know, it's not all the time, but we still keep in touch. And you know, Peter was a good manager for Dartford Football Club, that's for sure. And yeah, and it was the right decision. You know, that was the right decision. And then going on in management, I wanted to take that route. I was doing the coaching as well. I mean, long time ago, when Chris first went to Dover, and I was working up at the Elephant and Castle with a company that I was with, and you know, I got a call from Chris, and he was after me wanting to be player coach, you know, there. And again, I didn't think I was ready to do the coaching bit, you know, the experience side of things. And that was an opportunity a long, long time ago, but it didn't quite, you know, it didn't happen. But I wanted to go into it. It's strange. When I stopped playing, and then I sort of brought up that we got a big family anyway, and I still ended up, although I didn't have anything to do with football, I was watching the two boys, my daughter's boys, and they played for Phoenix, and that's my affiliation with Phoenix, other than that I live across the road from their ground. And but the boys played for them for a few years, you know. And what happened, we got to the under 16s, and they could play in the under 18 Kent League, but there was a couple of other clubs at the time, Crayford Arrows, who didn't go have a team in the Kent League at the time, and another club called Teviot, they didn't. I'm not sure if they're still around at the moment. But the Teviot was there was another club who had some players who we wanted that, and so at Phoenix we started the under 18 Kent League, and I got all right, I'll do it. But again, working with young players, and you know, we the worst thing that happened to me is that we ended up winning the Kent League, and Phoenix have, you know, it's the first time they've ever won anything like that, and you know, we won it, and it was against Hartford. It was against Hartford's under-18s on the final game of the season, and from that moment on, that's when I got a call from Dave Skinner, come back, we want you back, blah blah blah, and that's it's all started from there.
Enjoy those first few years back when Dartford reformed in the Kent League.
Yeah, it was nice, and we're talking about, you know, and the technology and things like that, and trying to get players together early on. You know, when we was playing over at Cray's ground, you know, Oxford Road, and we said, what can we do? We didn't have any money, and you know, I think, well, we was paying people £5 to come and play for us, you know, having expenses, you know. We didn't have, you know, we said, well, what we could do, you know, is they come into the changing room, you know, we can make sure they got a cup of tea, make sure the kit's hung up, you know, or we can get them a bag and things like that, just to feel a little bit special. And that's the special side of it now has gone more and more, and it's different, more different things, but it's something that is always kept in the mind. You know, you keep the players comfortable, you keep wanting them something different at your club, you might have that opportunity. It wouldn't, not so much about the money, you've got someone to sign for you.
Brilliant stuff, Tony. We could talk for hours. We'll have to get you back and talk about your playing career, because I'm sure you've been very modest, and we haven't even discussed one of your goals yet. You know, great goal scorer down the years for Dartford, so I think everyone would like to hear about your memories of that in more detail another time, maybe. Thanks very much for coming in to join us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who's listened this week. Don't forget you can subscribe on Audio Booms and iTunes. Keep up to date with all the latest sports stories throughout the week on our website at kentonline.co.uk.
The KM Football Podcast. All the latest reaction and analysis from the KM sports team. Listen every week and click subscribe on iTunes.